What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Hustle and Flowchart podcast with your boys, Matt Wolf and Joe Fear.
Wiki.
What's up, everyone?
Hey.
Welcome back to the Hustle and Flowchart podcast.
It's a lovely day
A lovely day in studio.
Mm-hmm.
We actually spent the day before yesterday actually in studio.
I feel like that's our life these days.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in a different episode,
though. That's fine. Yeah, we can do that. All right. Today, we are not talking about being in studios. We're actually talking to a digital nomad who loves to travel the world. But this guy's got like his business automated to a T.
He travels the world armed with a guitar and a laptop.
That's true. Yeah. It looks like a gun, but it's his guitar.
No, it doesn't.
It could be like Desperado.
Remember but that? That's a gun that looks like a guitar case.
Come on, that was a good movie, though. Maybe what? Tobias is secretly Desperado. All right, Tobias Rauscher. I might have butchered your name. I'm sorry. But Tobias is on the show with us today, and this guy is, like, no kidding at all, like, one of the best guitarists I think I've ever heard. And if you just go check out, I think on the show notes page, we're probably going to embed one of his videos. Just peek over there occasionally, you know, just check it out.
At the very least, we'll link over to his YouTube channel.
Yeah. There you go. So he's going to walk us through, and he's created like a whole freaking beast of a YouTube channel, over 35 million views, probably more at this point, and around 400,000 subscribers on YouTube and just social followings galore. So we break down a ton of YouTube strategies of how he got to that point.
Yeah, we kind of dive deep and really kind of pick apart his YouTube strategies. He's got one thing that he calls the YouTube satellite strategy, which I've literally never heard anybody ever talk about before. And I even threw around some ideas in like how to hack that strategy, but we'll get to that later.
The hacker brain comes out.
The hacker brain comes out. But he's got this really cool YouTube strategy that works well, and he's managed to duplicate it for other products. And he uses YouTube to drive traffic to his courses, and we dive deep into how his course is designed and what tools he uses for his course. So this is kind of like a mixed blended episode between like YouTube strategy and like kind of course building strategy, I guess, with a little bit of digital nomad lifestyle talk sprinkled in.
Yeah, I would say that's very accurate.
Yeah.
It's a good synopsis of what you're about to hear.
So yeah.
You should love it.
What can they do if they want another synopsis of what they're about to hear?
Well, the best synopsis of this happens every episode, actually. If you go to hustleandflowchart.com/comp, C-O-M-P, that's going to be your notes for this episode. If you hurry over there within, you know, a week of this thing releasing, go get them for free. We got your back. We got our note taker taking notes for all the action items, so you'll have your action guide of this episode.
Yeah, for sure. And all the tactics and tips and strategies that he breaks down around YouTube, we'll break those down on the notes in step-by-step fashion for you. Also, you want to support this show?
Yes.
Become an Evergreen Profits member. Go to egpletter.com and you can become an Evergreen Profits member. What's that going to get you?
I don't know.
That's going to get you a monthly newsletter mailed to you every month in the physical mail. Like, this is snail mail. Like, you're actually going to have to walk outside, open a mailbox.
That's and, the like, sound of paper.
Pull it out of an envelope and read this thing. But you also get access to the community. You get access to the training. We're actually starting to do live calls every month with our members so we can do Q&As and talk about some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that's working. And it's kind of like a bonus podcast episode every month, but interactive. You could ask us questions, and we're going to talk about some behind-the-scenes stuff. And it's just a really cool benefit of supporting us with the Evergreen Profits membership. It's $15 a month.
Dirt
no
cheap.
Brainer. Go to egpletter.com to get that. And if you want just the notes for this one, you got to be quick, but you can go to hustleandflowchart.com/comp to get that. We'd love to hook you up with both of them. So go get them both. Let's go talk to Tobias.
All right. Hey, Tobias, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So we connected a little while back. I think you actually reached out to us because you were following some of our stuff, and I hopped on your summit that you did back. You actually recorded it in Bali. Like, I remember the sun was rising as the video we were recording in the background. I was like,
"That's so early in the morning." Yeah.
But you're back in Germany now, which feels like Bali.
Right.
So, do you sleep?
Sometimes I sleep. Yes, I do.
Occasionally. Yeah.
Well, occasionally. Yes.
So when you reached out, I was like, okay, who's this guy? And checked into what you're doing and your very lifestyle. You have this, like, it seems like a perfect lifestyle business for yourself. you're very diversified. So I'm like, you're very, this is like an interesting dude. He's a, like, you, no shit. You're like one of the best guitarists I think I've ever heard. So like your YouTube videos. Yeah, man. And you have like, what, 35 million plus views on all your videos on YouTube.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, take us, I guess, I don't know, there's a lot of different rabbit holes we're going to go down, but give us kind of like some background. What, how did you get started in all this whole just lifestyle business and guitar and all that?
Yeah, so right after my studies, I kind of founded a startup in Berlin, and we got like some venture capital from some famous TV stations in Germany. And but still, after 3 years, we didn't get the follow-up investment. We didn't reach our revenue goals. And then we had to close down the startup. And for me, this was kind of, actually, I always wanted to start a own business. And then I had this company, but I wasn't really happy with it. I felt really, actually really trapped. And you had to report to your investors all the time. And there was a lot of pressure on my shoulders and having a team and being having to be responsible for the team. And I was more like, I want to travel. I want to be free. If I don't want to work for a month, I don't want to have to work. And so after my first endeavor failed, I decided to go more into this lifestyle business, more the Timothy Ferris style lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And at that time, my YouTube channel really took off. And I got a lot of views, and then I was like, okay, I kind of need to monetize the traffic that I get from YouTube. And then I founded my first own business that was totally independent. That is an online guitar academy that I still run, and it's like a membership site. So people pay monthly or yearly fee, and this kind of really freaked me up. And then I was sitting at home, you didn't have to do anything because money was coming in recurringly. And then I started to travel around and focusing on new projects. And this is, how everything started in the beginning.
Wow. Okay. So I like the fact that you started with startups, because we've been through that and we completely relate to the whole, like, you have to report to your investors and this team. Yes. And it's almost like it's decision by committee is like what we've used to. So we bailed out of that whole scene and went more lifestyle too. So
I'm curious to kind of dive into the YouTube stuff a little bit. So you've got 35 million downloads. How many subscribers do you have on your YouTube channel?
Currently around 330,000.
330,000. So let's talk about how you built that YouTube channel. Like, how did you get the initial momentum? I know in the beginning you weren't monetizing, you were putting great content out there, but how did that initial traction happen? How did you initially get discovery on that channel?
The first time I hit, like, for example, 10,000 views was when I uploaded my first video, Memories, and I basically ask other channels, and back then the Facebook pages had really a good organic reach, and I reached out to them and asked them to share if they wanted to share my video. Mm-hmm. And then more and more pages shared my videos, and then it kind of kept on going like this snowball effect. A lot of people shared it, and then the algorithm from YouTube was catching up and noticing that I had a lot of like a high watch time. And that the video was kind of popular, and then YouTube starts showing your videos to others as well. Mm-hmm. And from then on, basically, it really hit off. So I think in the beginning, it's really, really important to create some momentum. Some people even buy views, which I don't necessarily recommend to do, because if you buy, for example, fake views, that you just get a view, but it might last just for 3 or 5 or 10 seconds or whatever. But on YouTube, it's all about the watch time. So you cannot really trick the algorithm. You have to have your audience watch your videos like for more than 50 or 60%, and then YouTube will recommend your video. Because one really important thing about YouTube is what a lot of people don't know, that the like most of the traffic comes from YouTube recommending or suggesting your videos to other people that might be interested in that. So it's not as much as SEO stuff. You can be found on YouTube as well, but really the power of YouTube is when YouTube starts to recommending your videos to others.
And that basically happens by people watching past like a certain percentage of your videos versus like you were saying, if someone buys a view, it might only get them like a 1 second view that Facebook doesn't, or yes, YouTube doesn't even really recognize as a view. But if you get organic views, then they may watch 50-60+%. And that's what YouTube's looking for.
Absolutely. But even like if you just have like 20 seconds or 10 seconds or whatever, it's not that YouTube doesn't recognize that view. It even penalizes it because it's like it hurts your audience retention. Mm-hmm. And then YouTube sees that your video is not relevant, because if you have a 3-minute video, but people leave this video after 20 seconds, you have a pretty low audience retention and thus a low watch time. And then basically you can do whatever you want. Your video will not rank because YouTube basically knows all the metrics. And so it's, of course, one thing like is really important of YouTube. That is, of course, quality. Like you have to put quality content out there. But then the good thing is, once you have this content out there, it's like a good article that is ranking really well. Like you even gain views over time. So it's not like Instagram or Facebook where you push something out there and then after a few days it's basically dead or gone and you have to upload new stuff. Like still my most popular video is still awake. It has around I think 14 or 15 million views. And it's still like it brings in so much traffic for me because YouTube is still recommending this video because it performs well. So this is, of course, like, let's say the no-brainer that you have to put out good content, but then you still can do a lot to get your content seen. And this is, for example, to focus on the click-through rate conversion, which is really important. So this, for example, have an interesting title, have a good thumbnail, which is, of course, like if you, let's say if there's a suggested video page and you have like 10 videos, you want to be the video people click on. And that's, of course, a no-brainer as well. And then you can do some really interesting stuff. It's like YouTube is focused basically are centered around channel clusters. So you notice that, for example, if you, let's say you start watching, a Metallica video, and then all of a sudden YouTube is suggesting you similar videos. And this is because once your channel or your videos are related or belong to a certain channel cluster, it's way easier that YouTube suggests your videos. And one way you can do this, for example, that is one strategy that brought a lot of views for me. And actually there's one video of John Butler. His song is called Ocean. And this is really like, if you haven't seen this song, definitely check it out. It's a really amazing guitarist. Uh-huh. And he got a lot of views. I was like, okay, I kind of want to get views of his video of him because I know that people who like his stuff probably like my stuff as well.
Yeah.
And then what I did was basically that I used the same tags he was using in his video. And I wrote in my tags as well, for example, him as an artist and the song name. So basically to tell YouTube that we are kind of related so that the algorithm knows, okay, that's kind of similar stuff. And then because my video has had as well a good audience retention, YouTube kept on started actually to recommend my video next to his video. And this is when I got a lot of traffic from his video, for example. So to a certain extent, you can influence your ranking or where you're suggested by YouTube. But like the fundamental thing is that you have to have good content. So if you have a shitty video, that's just not good. You can optimize everything and do all the hacks and strategies, but you still won't be successful. It always goes hand in hand. It is kind of this formula where you have your own content, then of course it's like how well is your channel and your videos optimized, like in terms of tags, video description, of course, thumbnail, and then as well how well it is promoted, like how much traffic, how much data point you bring on to the video. And then if all these factors work well, like you definitely increase your chances of success on YouTube.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of similar philosophies there that you find in like SEO, you know, for example, in SEO, if you have bad content and somebody sees your link on Google, they click over to your URL and then they bounce right back to Google real quickly. Well, Google's probably slowly going to notice that and move you further and further down the rankings. And it sounds like kind of the same thing with YouTube. If somebody goes to a YouTube video and they watch a very tiny percentage of it, YouTube goes, okay, that wasn't relevant to what they were looking for. So let's not show that one again.
Hmm. Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And so it's like when people start a YouTube strategy, sometimes they're kind of bummed after putting out five videos or whatever and or whatsoever, and these videos are not really performing well. And one really, really important thing is when you do YouTube, like it is a long-term strategy. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't happen overnight, and a lot of people then like kind of lose interest because they're like, oh, I put out like 5 or 10 videos or whatsoever and it didn't really work, they get don't get any views. But it's like, even when I started out, my first videos didn't get any traction at all, but then it starts picking up, and then you get more and more traffic. So it's like, I call this like there's this bamboo tree story, like where you water your bamboo tree, but nothing is happening for years. And then all of a sudden it's like growing several feet per day. Yeah. But it's like the time before, it's like it built the roots, and it's kind of the same with YouTube. So it can take some time, but then it can pick up. And once your YouTube channel picks up, it's really like a blessing. It's just, yeah, probably like a really well-ranking article on Google or stuff, you just get more and more views. And this is, yeah, so I really, really love the YouTube model.
Yeah. And so let's go back really quick too, because you rattled off like a lot of good points, I think key points that people should know about YouTube. Let's dig deeper on a couple of those, like quality. I know your video qualities are just crazy good. Like you have, it looks like professional, you know, I don't know if you're in a studio or something like that with your guitar. What is your process?
The interesting thing is that like the really professional videos are kind of the new videos. But for example, the videos that have most of my views, I just recorded them at home, like with my first camera. So I know another thing as a guitarist, he's really good. And he put out a video that was out of focus. So, but still he racked up almost 1 million views with that. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be about the video quality. So you can have like really good success on YouTube, or great success, even with shitty videos. Like it's, if the videos are still, the content is good, like it's not that much about the quality. Of course, mm-hmm. you should have good quality and good videos, but it's not a must have. You can, sometimes it's really sympathetic and people can relate, for example, to a guitarist or whoever who's just doing spontaneous videos in his car or playing somewhere, than having this polished, perfect music videos or whatsoever. So yeah,
I've actually heard that like on YouTube that audio quality is more important than video quality. Like people will ditch a bad audio video faster than they'll ditch a video that's got poor video quality.
Yeah, audio is really important. Like that's definitely, even for interviews and stuff like this, like the audio is so important. Yeah. You can like if you have a really good video, but you have shitty audio, like it's way better than the other way around.
Yeah.
I think worse than the other way, right?
That's true.
No, it's better.
So yeah, no kidding. So that's and you mentioned the whole like kind of borrowing authority, linking, like influencing the YouTube algorithms. So I know when you and I chatted before, you have some tools you use and the tags and all that stuff. I think that's when I started realizing the power of tags and how you can kind of leverage other people's tags if they're ranking for something you want to rank for. What are some tools and like what's your process for doing that to try to rank like a new video or something like that?
For example, one tool is called VidIQ. Mm-hmm. And this tool is kind of, it's not a must have, but it helps you, for example, by directly showing you tags, other videos or channel that are used on other videos. And it helps you kind of show you the view velocity. So how many views per hour, for example, certain videos get, and they suggest or show you videos in your niche that are really popular right now, where you, for example, can take a look at and use some of the tags or whatever you want to do. And that's basically what I do. So you can you can check the tags of a video as well without having this tool. If you just do a right click, click on source code, and then search for keywords like in the source code, and then you will find the passage with the tags the video uses. So this is kind of the cheeky way. And the other one is just use the, I think it's even a free extension, or you pay like $5 per month or whatever. And then you can use the VidIQ tool, which makes it a bit more easy. And I use this, for example, to check out the competition. I don't really call it competition because in my case, these are other musicians as well. And I just try to find out which videos are really performing well. And then I basically, but before, let me tell you how I find out popular videos, because one important thing is a lot of people, when they check popular videos, they look for videos with a lot of views. But if a video has a lot of views, that doesn't mean that it's really popular. So, for example, you can have a video with, I don't know, 10 million views, and another video with just 1 million views, but the video with 1 million views was uploaded just, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, and gets way more views per day.
So the velocity is higher then.
Exactly. And what I do is, like, I just use an Excel sheet with a formula where I basically document, let's say, I do my research, I find the most, like, videos I think that are really popular, and then I write down the views they have today, and then I wait around 7 days, come back and check the view count at that point, and then you can basically calculate what the average views per day is that each of these videos get, and then I pick the ones that get most views per day, so that are in really most popular, and then I check their tags. And if I sometimes I really focus on a certain video, and then I basically just use the first tags, which are most of the important ones, and I use the same tags within my tags of the video, and use, for example, the words like the song name, the artist name as well in my video description. I try to include it there for 2 to 3 times. And these are like the really basic optimization strategies that you can use, and the research.
Nice. Okay. That explains a lot. I love that velocity thing too. I haven't heard of that before. Because the tags, yeah, using vidIQ, it's really easy. Even the free tool, you can know, look at other tags and I think copy them, save them to a clipboard so you can use them for, like, you know, future videos if you want to. So it's, yeah, it saves a lot of time, but I like the velocity strategy you just laid out. That's actually pretty clever. Now, with like linking in YouTube videos, we've heard that YouTube's not a friend of, like, trying to get them off the platform. Like, do you try to keep them on there, or are you immediately trying to send them and, like, grow an email list or join your
course? Yeah, that's the big problem. That's like, it's not as bad as on Facebook, because when you try to link out on Facebook, I just noticed that my reach, like, it drops like a bomb. It's like crazy. YouTube is kind of the same. Like, it's the principle. YouTube, like, the main metric for YouTube is watch time. That's like the total watch time is the main metric. So you want to rack up a high watch time. And of course, if you link to your own page or somewhere else, you kind of decrease your watch page, watch time, because people click away, leave YouTube, and leaving you with a lower watch time. And so, but of course I want to have these people on my email list as well. So, for example, when I upload videos of mine, I offer sometimes, like, my tabs for free, or I sell tabs, or sell access to my Guitar Academy. And yeah, so it's kind of a trade-off. It's really difficult to say, but I just try not to overdo it, but I still have links, and I still do it, and it's profitable to get traffic from YouTube, of course. But yeah, I think there is no wrong or right. It's difficult to say for sure.
Yeah. And that's what we've heard, is, like, it's almost like you can keep them together, or, you know, or you can almost, like, keep people on a path in YouTube for maybe a period of time. And then there's an exit video, a time where you can, you know, take them off the platform. So Google doesn't, or YouTube doesn't penalize everything, but maybe it's like a single video rather than every single one if you're dropping links.
So yeah.
I'm sure there's all tons of strategies, but like you said, it's just like Facebook. You post a link and it's like no one's gonna see it for the most part.
But fun. I did a really interesting test. I uploaded one video of mine, Passion Loop, on YouTube and on Facebook natively. And on Facebook, no, on YouTube, this video got over 1 million views. On my Facebook page, it got over 100,000 views. So, but of course, I have less subscribers on YouTube. But both videos got kind of a decent amount of views and data. And the really interesting thing is that on YouTube, this same video got 62% audience retention. So people watched on average 62%. On Facebook, the same video only racked up 7%.
Whoa.
So that's really crazy. So you really can see, like, on Facebook, it's more like fast food, you know, people go through it, they don't really engage deeply. And on YouTube, it's more like people really watch your stuff. So you can really see, like, that there is definitely a different quality.
Yeah.
When it comes to views on both platforms.
I mean, that really makes sense, too. You got to figure on Facebook, somebody's just kind of sitting there on their phone, just kind of thumbing through the news feed, and they see a video and they kind of might go, oh, what's this about? Maybe they'll bookmark it thinking they'll come back and watch it later. Nobody ever looks at their bookmarks on Facebook.
That's true.
But they bookmark it thinking they'll watch it later, and then they never watch it. Now, when somebody goes onto YouTube, they're actually purposefully going to YouTube to kind of sit around and watch videos. Like the, you know, the mode that your mindset is in is kind of different on Facebook than it is on YouTube, you know? So
yeah,
totally makes sense.
Yeah. It's like psychological. Yeah, yeah.
So what are some other mistakes that you see, like, new YouTubers or maybe even YouTubers that have been doing it for a while? What are mistakes that you're seeing a lot of them make that they should avoid?
Yeah. One really important one is just to upload the video and think that's it. Like, once you uploaded the video, you have to promote it. Like, it's not over. And especially in the first 48 hours, you need to try to send as much traffic to the videos as possible. Like, because this really gives YouTube the signal or its algorithm that your video is popular, and then YouTube keeps on recommending it, or at least is more likely to recommend it. So I always try, when I launch a video, to do, for example, a live premiere. One thing I did, I used perks to have people to watch my videos as soon as possible. For example, last time when I uploaded a video, I kind of started a bribe, and that was a free tabs for this song that I only gave to the first 1,000 subscribers. After that, I took down the link. And so, and I announced it to my email list and on my social media sites. So I got a lot of views at the launch of my video. So this is as well really important, and a lot of people don't do this. I upload the video and think that's it, and then they are kind of sad because they don't get a lot of views. So even though it's on YouTube, try to keep on pushing it. Send it to your email list, of course. Sometimes even use, in the music scene as well, you have these aggregation sites that kind of promote your videos, and you can work with, you can contact them and stuff like this. So just basically try whatever you can do to get traffic on the video, and then YouTube will, kind of reward you for that.
Gotcha. So don't just rely on YouTube's algorithms to send you the views and the traffic. You gotta kickstart it yourself a bit.
Yeah, and one thing is, especially when you're starting out, you don't have a lot of views and subscribers. And that's kind of kind of a rabbit hole, because you have to get out there, but it's difficult because YouTube doesn't have a lot of data, you know. If you have 100 views, it's really difficult to say, like, what your watch time is and whatsoever. So it's good to have a decent amount of data, and then at some point YouTube keeps, like, picking up and then keeps sending traffic your way. But especially in the beginning, it's super important. Even if you have a really good video and you just upload it to a channel with like 50 subscribers or whatever, it's really hard to get it going. So you have to push the video in the beginning. It's basically as well what these, for example, if the big brands are putting out viral videos or whatever, usually they really nurture these videos, or they really, they seed them. I think that's the correct term. So they put a lot of ad budget behind them to get the first couple of million views or whatsoever. And then kind of this multiplier effect takes place. But it needs to have a basis, like a foundation, and then it keeps on going. But you have to, like, reach the critical mass, and that's really important. So especially when you're starting out on YouTube.
Now, you said they'll put some budget behind them. Are you talking about actually running YouTube ads or advertising from different platforms back over to their video?
Yeah, I just talked to one of the managing directors of one of the big companies, like, here in Germany, who do, like, some these viral video campaigns. And he just thought, I'm not quite sure how they do it, because they are in a completely different field, of course. But it's like, some people use just YouTube ads, but I heard it's kind of expensive. What you can do, I once tried, for example, using Facebook ads, because you can really get a really cheap views on Facebook. And then I tried to get the people from Facebook who watched my video, because it was just like a short snippet, one of the best scenes. And I was like, watch the whole video on YouTube. So that kind of worked as well. And you can contact aggregation sites. It worked like a charm, like a couple of years ago. When like you could post YouTube videos on YouTube.
Oh yeah.
And because that brought so much traffic, I just contacted them. I was like, hey, I got this new video. Would you like to share it with your audience? Because all these aggregation sites were looking for good content, of course. And then I gave it to them. They shared it. And sometimes even they asked, is like, you could, like, I think it was $50 or whatever. Some, like, one page, for example, it was called I Love Music, I think. And they offered, like, they share your music or your video for $50 or $20 or whatsoever. And this worked so well. That brought me so many views. But it's kind of, since Facebook changed its algorithm, it's not really working anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So with have you done some YouTube ads to like jumpstart it? And if when you use YouTube ads, does the views that come from YouTube ads, do those affect the organic search algorithms? Do you know?
To be honest, I didn't run YouTube ads to my videos yet. I just heard people that tried YouTube ads as well, and they were like, "Oh, it's really expensive," so I turned them off, turned them down. But I haven't used paid YouTube ads for that yet.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I'm kind of curious if, like, if I run YouTube ads to a video and I rack up, let's say, 100,000 views because I was doing advertising, does YouTube see that as good traction on the video? Hmm. Or does YouTube see that as, well, they advertised to this video, so that doesn't really count as organic views?
My guess is that it doesn't matter. So you can, of course, at least my guess is that because it's just about the watch time. Like if you like if you run an ad campaign and you get 100,000 views or whatsoever, and that people really like the video and they keep watching it, I think it doesn't matter. It's like it definitely doesn't hurt your ranking or whatsoever just because you use ads. Mm-hmm. So then it's like even those people, of course, can like the video and keep on watching. The only thing or advice I would have is like really try to run ads on videos where you know that they perform well. So mm-hmm. if you have some data beforehand, definitely check the relative audience retention, check the watch time, and really try to figure out which videos are your best performers and then push them. Because at least my experience is that YouTube really focuses on some like your best videos and then kind of pushes them, and they kind of are like the pulling horse. They bring views to your other videos, but still they get most of the traction. So I would really try to identify your most popular or your winning videos and then double down on them, promoting them, because that helps your other videos in the long run as well. But that might get you better, cheaper views and a longer watch time when you put a budget on ads, for example.
That's I love that strategy, is not try to be everywhere or try to be the best on every single video upload, but like hone in on one. And it's kind of like taking an idea from these companies like that one you talked to that creates these viral videos. I'm thinking of there's so many companies that have had YouTube like viral videos, and you see them embedded on their website, like on their homepage. And because I've heard from previous guests that embedding it and then getting the views there also sends a good signal to YouTube and I think Google at the same time to potentially get ranked there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so do you do any of that as well? Kind of like that cross, your website and Google and Facebook or YouTube?
Yeah, I do have my videos embedded on my own website. And when I launch videos, for example, when I offer the tabs, I have a call to action below the video. And then I put it on my own site. So I embed the YouTube video, put a red call to action, like get the tabs now or join my Guitar Academy. So to have kind of the same effect, at least when I send traffic from my email list or social channels.
Yeah, and that makes sense. It's like direct them to your own site. The video is still there, so you can get the views, but maybe also retarget them, or you can do kind of anything you want with them there. Cool.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's anything. Is there anything else on, like on the YouTube front that you think would be super valuable to the audience here that we didn't cover yet?
One thing I made really great experiences with is using or leveraging other channels to get views over there. Because I basically found out about this kind of strategy by accident. I call this like the satellite strategy. And because I some people send me videos and they were like, oh, this guy stole your video. And I checked out the video, and then there was kind of a, it was a channel from Thailand, I think. Mm-hmm. And it was like, my video still awake. And then there was just like the description was, the video title was in Thai, and I translated it, and it meant something like the guitar god or something. I would, of course, never title myself this, but it went, it got over 6 million views on his channel. And I was like, wow. And then I got so many fans on my Facebook page from, before that, I contacted this guy first. I was like, yeah, take down the video, like you saw my video or whatsoever. And then I was like, okay, wait, I get more and more fans from Thailand because of him, because the whole channel was in Thai, like all the comments in Thai, everything in Thai. Wow. And I was like, okay, you can keep the video, but a link back to my channel and put my URL, my website in there. And then it still brings in a lot of fans from Thailand. So my music is really big in Asia, like compared, for example, in Germany, nobody cares about my music. But in Asia, Russia and Brazil, it's really picking up. And the funny thing is, in these countries, like the people, let's say, ripped or used my video as, and uploaded them, kind of stole them. And then I was like, okay, that works really well. This is really cool because these people joined my guitar academy. And then I started to actively contacting other channels. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, I got a really good performing video here. You have like, some people had like, I don't know, 5 or 10 or 20,000. And I was like, yeah, wouldn't you want to upload my video, for example, on your channel? Because you reach, like, YouTube has a complete own ecosystem per country. Like, for example, in Germany, like, we have all these German channels. Like, you don't even go to American or English or what. It's like a closed ecosystem because YouTube knows, oh, they're from Germany and I recommend German videos to them. Uh-huh. And the same is in Asia. I was like, it just like everything is in Thai or in different languages. And then I kind of noticed, okay, wait. Or in Spanish market is really big, or Portuguese, like the Brazilian market. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay, putting your videos on other channels to get to their audiences, basically. And it's kind of a win-win because they get a lot of views on my videos because they perform. Like, the principle behind it is like, if you have a really good performing or well-performing video, it will perform well again and again. It's not just the one time you upload it on your channel, but if a guy from Russia uploads it and shares this, it will have the same effect. So virality, if that's pronounced right.
Yeah, you said it right.
So this is a really powerful way to get traffic. Of course, it's not all on your channel, but a lot of people will want to learn more about you or your content, check out your own channels, cool. And always tell them to link back. And this has helped me to get a lot of views.
My hacker brain just goes, well, I guess you could always go get like a VPN, go create a YouTube account in Russia, go create a YouTube account in China, and just clone your own account over and over and over again in every country by just switching to a different IP address using a VPN.
I mean,
absolutely.
You're probably right.
The only problem is you would need to leverage or rack up views on all these channels because in the beginning, that's like the rabbit hole again. Like you start out with nothing. Like I think the most difficult thing is actually to get the first 10,000 subscribers. Yeah. And then that's the reason when you use other channels like that have a existing fan base, like let's say like 5, 10, 20,000 subscribers, and you basically directly introduce your video to their audience. You have directly a lot of data points, a lot of views, and then YouTube starts to rank your video faster and suggest it. So, a lot of cool stuff you can do.
Yeah, and Matt, I don't know if you want to start learning Russian and Portuguese and making sure the I guess you could hire people over there, but
I would hire that portion out.
But that's really interesting. I've never heard anybody say, but it makes perfect sense. And I know I've seen it when I travel to other countries. You see kind of like a different YouTube logo with. Like, absolutely. You know, Spain will have like ES, I think it says, España. Yes, and like, and you're just like, oh, wow, this is completely different. It looks kind of the same. And I was thinking, oh, is there a duplicate like video issue? But maybe not if you said, you know, they're kind of had their own ecosystem. So I guess why not?
Yeah, I have a list of links. For example, my video is still awake. Got over 50 million views in general on several channels combined. Just on my channel, it got 15 million views. But I have one channel in Russia got, I think, 3 million by now. The Thai channel, I got 6 million. Then I have the same video on a Vietnamese channel, and of course probably some channels I don't even know because my video went viral, and I don't like, just like some people send me the links when they discover it, and so this is how I found out because some of them, and then I started to contact people, but it's like I don't experience a problem with duplicate content.
Now, with your videos, is the content all music, or is there speaking as well?
Like, I have a mix. Like, I have, let's say my most popular videos are just my own music, like fingerstyle guitar stuff, solo acoustic. But I do have some tutorials as well where I teach this kind of style. And of course, to kind of promote my Guitar Academy as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's kind of a mix.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I'm asking is because, you know, YouTube now actually transcribes the videos in the background, right? So when you upload a video where you're speaking, they try to transcribe it using automation as best as they can. And I'm almost wondering if the strategy you just talked about works well because your music, as opposed to speaking, like the videos that are probably getting shared a lot in other countries are more music videos versus speaking videos, because YouTube can't transcribe the speaking in the background, right? Like, they can't transcribe you speaking, so there couldn't be a duplicate content penalty because there's no speaking for YouTube to compare. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I'm just not quite sure if it's just about like the captions or the translation, or if it's like for example Shazam or something, where that they just analyze the audio file, for example.
Yeah,
then I think it would be the same for music and spoken content, because it's just like the patterns or the wave forms of the audio files.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah, I guess they could be checking it that way too.
Yeah. The YouTubes are smart. Yeah. Those scientists over there, we can't beat them. Got to work with them. That is cool, man. No, that's fascinating. Thanks for being so open with like everything you do there on the YouTubes. What's your what's your plan with YouTube? I know you have all these other projects, and we can kind of maybe transition more that direction. You have your Guitar Academy that sounds like is that like just a kind of ever growing thing with the traffic from YouTube mainly?
It is like, it's my main passive income. It's like this online Guitar Academy thing. I wouldn't say that it keeps on growing all the time. Mm-hmm. So it stays on the same level for 3 years, which is a good level.
Wow.
But it's just not growing automatically. So I focus more on using Facebook ads. One of my issues is that I have a lot of my viewership is from Asia, Russia, and Brazil. And these markets usually don't buy stuff and sometimes cannot afford this.
Right.
So, and then I noticed that most of my students in the academy are, for example, from the US, but most of my viewers are from different countries. And then I was like, okay, I need to get more people from the US or from Europe on. And then I was like using Facebook ads, for example, similar custom audiences, lookalike audience and stuff, to reach more of these people there that I don't reach with my YouTube account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's, I could see that being an issue. It's kind of a disconnect. And then obviously then you have the training in there, and ideally they're going to, I don't know what, if your trainings, is it in English or German?
Yeah.
It's in English. Yeah. So yeah, that would be kind of difficult for some of those folks to buy too.
Yes,
so
yes.
Yeah.
And of course to afford, like in Asia, they just cannot afford like 20 something per month or stuff. So yeah.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious. So with the course, I'm kind of curious about, the sort of building of the course, like what tools did you use to make the course? Like, do you have like a members area where it's locked down? What is the whole course look like that you built the academy?
Basically, when I started out, the first tool, I wouldn't use it right now anymore, but I started out with Optimize Press and Optimize Member. Uh-huh. That was an easy to implement solution in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Then I used my whole funnel. It's all centered around Active Campaign. So it's kind of the Jeff Walker launch formula. You go into funnel. I kind of changed this approach or use some 7-day challenges or stuff to get the leads in to kind of give them value. And then I open the academy, and then it's basically just a membership. I use the drip fed method as well, that people like that. For example, if you would sign up to my Guitar Academy right now, every week you would get new lessons, but I recorded these lessons already. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the membership metal membership platform.
Gotcha.
How it works. I have several courses in there. I have some guest instructors, some master classes, which was really nice, a fingerstyle guitarist as well. And it's basically a mix of cool content, DripFed, and yeah, these are the platforms I use for this project.
Yeah,
I love it because what you teach is so evergreen. It's, you know, we teach a lot of like digital marketing stuff where I might make a video and teach something about Facebook ads, and then 2 months later that video no longer is relevant because Facebook changed everything. Yep. Right, but when you're in the guitar niche, it's like that it's amazing because you can make videos 3 years ago that teach somebody how to play a song or how to, you know, absolutely, how to do chords or whatever, and it's going to be just as relevant 10 years from now as it is today.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's true. Never thought about that.
Yeah, I've purchased old guitar courses that looked like they were recorded in like late 80s, and still it's like you can still learn from them as long as it's taught well.
Yeah, right. You mentioned something that grabbed my interest. You mentioned that you did a 7-day challenge to grab some leads. Can you sort of walk us through what that 7-day challenge looks like?
Yeah, it's basically, I have a landing page where I like say, hey, like my focus is modern percussive fingerstyle. So I don't teach people how to play the guitar from the beginning. So mm-hmm. I focus on a certain niche, which is like people who can't play the guitar, but who want to take their acoustic guitar playing to the next level. Mm. And in this 7-day challenge, I kind of introduce people to this kind of playing. So for example, using the body of the guitar at the cajon, like where you like hit a bass and snare hit and then play some chords to it. And each day you get a video, like a short lesson. So I give you a short mini win, like a quick win. And then you get to know me, you get to know my style of teaching. I tell you a bit of my story and what I do and what you can learn. And then I introduce them to my guitar academy once they know me and got some lessons from me. And yeah, then basically the rest is done by ActiveCampaign and many email sequences. Yes.
Dude, that is so cool. It's such a lifestyle business. And this is exactly why you can travel around to Bali or live, you know, for a certain number of months. That's super cool, man. How about like, do you have any support or other help? Like, do you have teams or like a person you hire to kind of handle some of the admin stuff?
Yeah. Kind of this funny thing is I'm kind of, I don't want to say a control freak, but, I think as many solopreneurs and stuff, it's kind of hard to give stuff up, especially if it's like it's part of your passion, like with my guitar playing and stuff. It's like I used to want to control everything, right. And then I went on the Nomad cruise from Panama to Portugal, so across Atlantic, and it's kind of like a cruise ship, and you have like 200 to 300 digital nomads on there. It's like a conference on a boat, so pretty cool. And then this was shortly after I launched my academy and it worked all well. But for example, of course, I did all the emails, like if payments didn't go through, if people needed to, had some issues whatsoever. And then there was like, okay, we're in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. You might have no Wi-Fi. And I was like, wait, no Wi-Fi? I need to have Wi-Fi. And then I was like, okay, damn. And I had the former intern of my first company that I launched. And I just contacted Chris and I was like, hey, Chris, you need to help me out. I just give you access to my Gmail, my email account, where I have all the email support emails in. And you just have to manage it. He was a guitarist or is a guitarist as well. And then I gave him all my email. Like he started managing all the emails. And since then, I never checked back into my original email account because he's like now my, let's say, main assistant, who manages everything, all the customer inquiries, and only if there are any issues he cannot do, he forwards this email and then I tell him what to do. But it's so nice because at some point you don't have to do anything at all. Like you have, like I remember when I read Timothy Ferriss for a work week and then it was like maximum 1 hour work week. And then I started to focus on new project because it worked so well to have someone like taking care of everything. And it feels so good if you like give up control of your businesses.
So I'm trying to put all the puzzle pieces together in my head and kind of paint the picture of what you're doing. So basically you're putting videos on YouTube and you're obviously optimizing these YouTube videos in the ways that we talked about. But then from these YouTube videos, and you also embed them on your website, and from these YouTube videos and your website, the call to action is to go do like a 7-day challenge. The 7-day challenge kind of gives them some quick wins, some results in advance. And by the end of the 7-day challenge, you kind of sell them on getting into your larger course. Your larger course is inside of Optimized Press, Optimized Member. The course is essentially drip fed out to them once they subscribe. And that's kind of the business model there in a nutshell.
That's more or less like the business model around the Guitar Academy, but only like the 7-day challenge is just one of my lead magnets. I, for example, wrote a guitar book, fingerstyleguitarsecrets.com, which is kind of where I tried the Russell Brunson free plus shipping funnel, which worked really well. Like I brought in over 30,000 in the first month just selling this book. And then I kind of upsell my Guitar Academy. So I have different, I try different ways to, or just, giving tabs out for free, and then the people are joining on my list. And so, but the 7-day challenge worked really well.
Gotcha. Wow. And you also have like your Tube Accelerator, where you help other like musicians get noticed on YouTube, right?
Yes, right. This is my latest business. I started it in late 2018. This is basically in the TubeAccelerator.com. It's kind of where I teach musicians all the strategies that they need to kind of grow a fan base or blow up on YouTube. Mm. And this is as well kind of, this is more like a 3-week program, like an online course. And it works similar from the funnel. So I use a completely, now I use Thrive Themes and Thrive Card. Uh-huh. Thrive Card, I started using it because of you guys. And so this like the system behind it, and of course ActiveCampaign and Membarium for the membership area. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of online course where I have I use a Facebook ad for that, and then several Facebook ads. Then I give 3 video lessons for free, so the people get to know me and learn some stuff. And if they like this, I kind of open the Tube Accelerator. It's kind of a evergreen model as well. And then they can enroll for 6 days. After that, the program closes again. And this works really, really well as well. And it's totally automated as well, kind of like the Guitar Academy.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, you're using pretty much the identical tool stack that we use too. Yeah. We're actually using Thrive Cart for our checkout. We're using Thrive Architect for all of our landing pages these days. We use ActiveCampaign to follow up with customers.
Membarium.
Membarium is what we use to protect the content. So it sounds like the exact same marketing stack. So that's awesome.
Yeah, high five.
Yeah, seriously. That's awesome, man. And just make sure not to build too many of these things up, because then it sounds like real work. Like you're going to have to do a lot. I want to talk about like the nomad life, man, because I don't think we've had anyone on here that's like strictly lifestyle business, so systemized. I'm sure there's like avenues you go down in your mind. Maybe you don't, but I know I would. You know, we would, blessing and curse of too much knowledge. It's like, oh, I could take this here. I could scale this much, or you know. How does that, like, do you ever run into that, or is that like a...
All the time.
Yeah?
All the time. Like a lack of focus, having so many ideas, like starting different projects. Like right now, I'm starting like online conferences, and I work on a new project as well. So it's kind of where I'm like having to kind of stop myself, because I'm like, hey, wait. You have this kind of shiny object syndrome, and you just want to like work on all so many projects. So, definitely an issue.
So how do you deal with that? Is it just like a constant struggle, or do you think you're getting better? Like, do you have some ways to stay focused?
The thing is, I'm still undecided if I like this or not, because on the one hand, like I have this creative artist, guitarist side in me, which is like a song. When I write this song, and when the song is finished, I start working on a new song, because it gets boring to keep on playing the same song over and over. And for me, it's the same with businesses and this lifestyle businesses, because I think like, or usually I use like, let's say 3 to 6 months to work on a business. And then I see it always like a wheel. You get it spinning, and then you can go away, but the wheel keeps on spinning. Mm. And so this is so fascinating. And I really love the process of starting a business, but at some point it gets kind of boring for me. Yeah. And then I lose interest, then I get somebody in to basically do the operational thing. And then I love this creative process of, okay, let's think about a new system or new project, new what's a business whatsoever. But I think it's kind of, on the one hand, it's really satisfying. On the other hand, if I would only focus on the return or to scale a business to get more money, it would be wiser, I think, to scale a business that works well, like, for example, from 6 to 7 figures instead of like going to the next project. Mm-hmm. But so it's I'm kind of biased there, because for me, it's as well like a passion and just fun setting up online projects. So,
yeah,
I'm not sure.
You're speaking to the choir. I think that's a lot of, you know, a lot of us entrepreneurs, like, we don't like the maintenance of a project once it gets too monotonous and boring. And that's when you got to insert someone new.
Well, that's why, like, over the years, you get entrepreneurs like us who will collect like 200 domain names because they've got all sorts of projects and ideas, and then none of them ever pan out except for like 4.
That's a good, very good point.
Yes. Great.
That's true, man. So we're what's next on your list in terms of traveling and living abroad and crazy cruises across the, you know, biggest freaking oceans of the world? What do you have planned?
Like this summer, I'm gonna spend it here in Berlin or in Europe. I love Spain and stuff, but usually when it gets colder here, like in October, November, I kind of leave for half a year. And last December or November, I went to Brazil, for example, then Bali, then Thailand, and came back when it got warmer over here. And I think, I don't know. I do it on like pretty spontaneously. So when I'm like, okay, I am kind of bored here or the weather sucks. And then I check out Google Maps and check out flights. And then I fly somewhere. Because it's like the cool thing is you have these kind of nomad communities. And like if I, for example, fly to Canggu, Bali, I think I know more people than here in Berlin. So it's so cool. You have co-working spaces. You have this super healthy, nice lifestyle. It's just so easy to live there. And you can live like in a really nice villa with your own pool, with everything for a fraction of the cost. And so, it's just like, if you rent a scooter, it costs like $3 per day.
Oh, wow.
And it's like you have such a great lifestyle over there. And a community, so it's nowadays it's just so easy and so nice to travel around and live somewhere else and just
so when you travel, are you specifically looking for a nomad community? Like, obviously you have an established base in Bali now, but if you're traveling anywhere else, you're not just going alone and going to Airbnb. It sounds like you're seeking out people there that
Like I try to focus on that, like at least checking out like some of the co-working spaces, or if they have co-working spaces. And there's a great website, it's nomadlist, I think .io, no, com, I think. Mm-hmm. And there you can check out, for example, around the world, like the best spots for nomads, like in South America, in the States, in Asia, in Australia, whatsoever. And they show you the average monthly cost, how good the Wi-Fi is, how the people, are they friendly or not, how well do they speak English, all the interesting stuff. And then you can see, decide on how many co-working spaces are there. You see even the nomads who are currently there. And then it's so easy to go there to, I don't know, to Colombia or whatsoever, and just go in a co-working space, connect with local nomads over there. And a really nice free lifestyle.
That's cool. Yeah, I love that. That's a good resource. We'll link that up in the show notes too.
Yeah. Now, before we start to wrap up, I'm kind of curious, because we've talked about a lot of different tools. I know you used to use OptimizePress and OptimizeMember, and now you're kind of doing more with Mimbarium and ActiveCampaign and Thrive Architect. You mentioned VidIQ as like a great tool to get keywords and things like that. Are there any other tools that maybe we haven't talked about yet on this episode that are pretty killer tools that have really helped you in your business?
Oh, let me think. Like, of course, number one, I would say is ActiveCampaign, which is definitely a powerhouse.
What about any other, maybe like YouTube tools, or is VidIQ just kind of the main one that you use?
There is another one, keyword tool, IO, I think, but I don't use it that often. So for YouTube, I don't use a lot of tools, to be honest. It's mainly VidIQ and then using tech strategies and promotion strategies. And it's like for my business, I think it's like, I bet I will think of many like when you stop this call. But right now, I think it's just like you have to write Thrive RT, like the Thrive plugin suite is really good for marketing stuff. As you said, Mabarium is really good. Yeah, basically the tools we talked about, I think these are the main ones. Of course, Facebook Ad Manager. Yeah, but the standard tools. At least I, right now, I don't have any fancy tools that I use.
Cool.
That's probably a good thing. You're keeping it simple, man. And I know Wait.
Loom. Loom is really good for doing like screencasts because always, for example, if I set up a new course or I want to set instructions to my assistant, I usually do it with videos. I usually build my own video courses for people I work with. Mm-hmm. So to keep the communication efficient and so then they don't have to contact me if they have certain questions, even if I hire new people. So I usually like record videos and I use Loom for that and Vimeo as well sometimes. So these are as well. But yeah, that's Slack. Trello for my manage like the
project management.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, we love Loom too. I don't think a day goes by that we're not doing something with Loom.
Oh yeah, it's all training the video, you know, training our team and our staff.
Yes.
Cool. And you know, we didn't even mention it, but before we wrap up, give us like a quick like. I know this is still. I don't think it's open yet, but your newest project, what Smartifier? Is that did I say it right?
Smartifier. it's basically like Blinkist, but just for podcasts and online courses. So we are like getting the key insights out of podcasts and courses because it's like, face it, like we have a lot of really good content out there, like as well your podcast and your blog, and there are many others as well, but sometimes most people lack time. And of course they have their own businesses. And then it's like, we focus on getting really the key insights, the meat, cutting up the fluff. Mm-hmm. And so you can basically get straight to the point and, of podcasts and online courses. And this is in the making right now.
It's in the making. Okay, cool. Well, we'll definitely link that up. So
as
we're wrapping up here, man, I know you mentioned Tim Ferriss's book a lot, 4-Hour Workweek, which makes me just want to go back because I haven't read that thing in a long time. Like, there's probably stuff I'm like, oh, yeah. Because that's how we both started with that book. What are some other books or maybe resources, you know, like you said here, podcasts even, that you tend to recommend others?
Yeah, like a book I really like as well is, I think it's called The Why You're Here Cafe.
Say it one more time.
Why? The Why Are You Here Cafe or Cafe. Oh. I think I pronounced it wrongly. Okay. It's really, it's more about like the fun. Wait, I need to change my.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're good.
I have this earpod and they're losing battery. But yeah, this is good. It's about the like the fundamentals, like why you're here in this life. What is your purpose? What are you doing with your life? Is it all about money, getting more, or is there more? And so I think it's a really short book, but it can be really life changing. Like for my brother, it changed his life completely. Like, and for me, it was really good as well. Wow. And then a really good one is, I read it recently, is Atomic Habits. That's I think really powerful because our habits really define who we are. What are we doing in the morning? What are our bad, like just thinking about your bad habits, for example, just watching too much TV or whatsoever, and how to basically overcome them or even replace them with better habits. So I think this is like for a lot of people, can be, and for me especially as well, because I have a lot of bad habits as well. So this is a really good book, I think. And recently, which kind of blew me away as well, of course, of some experiences in Bali and all that stuff. And it's by Dr. Joe Dispenza, Becoming Supernatural.
Yeah.
It's more about a completely different field, more the spirituality and world, but it's super interesting. Like, let's say there might be more, and all this, the power you have, your thoughts have, and heart coherence and all that stuff. So it's not like a business book, but it's more like beyond that, like about life. So these are the books I have in mind right now that are really interesting.
Dude, that's piquing my interest, the Becoming Supernatural, because that's, Joe Dispenza, Dr. Joe, he's got some amazing things. And it's not business, but dear God, like just his YouTube videos too. You could watch some of those, you'd be like, oh, damn, okay.
Yeah.
You can unlock all different parts of your brain.
Yeah.
Cool, man. with Bali really quick, like what was the biggest, what's like a must go place if someone wants to travel to Bali? Like, is there a specific spot?
Yeah, definitely like one, definitely Canggu. Like Canggu is the nomad hotspot. And one of the, it's like, is it a cafe or a restaurant? It's called Madu, I think. And I just, oh wait, I think I have to switch my
earphones. We can hear you.
Wait.
We'll play some waiting music.
I'm back. Hey.
That was good. We'll have to we'll take a clip from your guitaring, you know, and then we'll just like paste it over some of the gaps here. So Canggu, I think is what you said, right? In a cafe.
Yeah, and Milk and Madu was a place I really liked. Or Sinta Cafe, or the co-working space Dojo is like where the, let's say, the scene is. It's kind of the famous co-working space there where you can connect with a lot of people. And if you're more into the spiritual stuff, go to Ubud. So these are the, I would say, like must go to places.
Cool.
Oh no, Shady Shack in Canggu. Best vegan stuff if you're into that. Like so awesome. Like awesome stuff. You basically have so much so many nice restaurants over there. So yeah. Check out Canggu in Bali.
Perfect, man. Thank you. That's my like trip list in one day. Didn't that was a selfish thing, of course. Thank you, Tom. Dude, okay, so I know there's a lot of places to take people, but where should folks go explore, go down the rabbit hole all about you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. If you're into guitar playing, check out my YouTube channel. Just Google my name. I think it's really weird. Like, it's called, my name is like Tobias Rauscher. So you find stuff over there. If you're into fingerstyle, go to Tobias or TobiasGuitar.com. If you want to learn about YouTube, go to TubeAccelerator.com or Fanbase Academy. It's mainly focused, or it's built for musicians, but of course anyone can use the strategies. And my newest project is smartifier.com. I think you're going to link to this one. Yeah. And we launched the Digital Lifestyle Conference where we kind of interview really cool people. And yeah, we did the interview with Joe over there as well. Uh-huh. And we're going to launch this in September, the second edition, I think. Yeah. So if you're interested, check out the Digital Lifestyle Conference. So these are, I think, the most important channels.
Those are good. Yeah. We'll make sure to link everything up in your YouTube videos so no one has to worry about spelling and stuff like
my
that.
Name. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, thank you very much for joining us today and your time. And
thank you for having
me. Travel somewhere fun soon.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, buddy. Have a good one. Bye.
You too. Bye bye.
Thanks everybody for listening to this episode of the Hustle and Flowchart podcast. Before taking the time to listen, we want to give you something a little bit special. Every single episode that we do, we actually have somebody on our team take notes. We basically have a Cliff's Notes version of every episode where you can go and find all of the tips and tactics that they laid out, all of the resources that they laid out, all the good stuff from this episode. We actually have a nice simple notes version that you can find on our website. So go to evergreenprofits.com, find this episode that you just listened to, and give us your email address and we'll send you the notes. Thanks for listening.
Go get it.
Wiki.